Good afternoon, Eastern Washington. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the front lines in the battle for freedom and liberty, Olympia, Washington. Brought to you by the committee to elect Matt Shea, Republican, and the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. It's not about right or left. It's about right and wrong. Our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ, and we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. And as Ephesians 2, 5 through 6 says, God made us alive together with Christ. By grace you have been saved, and raised us up with him, and seated us with him in the heavenly places in Christ Jesus. If the church understands that, we're unstoppable. I hope everybody gets that concept. Everything that's been put under the feet of Jesus has been put under our feet if we're in Christ and Christ is in us. And there is a lot of people praying right now because we are in legislative session. I'm going to be bringing on Representative Dave Taylor here in a bit, also bringing on Sherry Duvalli of Readout News, who is finishing up an interview with Larry Klayman and Cliven Bundy about the next steps in that case. And I'll get to why that is here in a second. But a lot to talk about today. But I want to talk about one thing first. If you are not involved in politics, politics eventually will be involved in you, okay? If you are not getting involved in the political realm. Now, that's not to say that the solutions are in the political realm. But one of the things that can be done is the tide can be turned back. Things can be stopped. Time can be bought. We can preserve our freedoms for the next generation. It's one of the things that I really I keep in mind every time I do this show. We're not just doing this for us. We're doing this for the next generation. We're doing this for our kids and our grandkids. We're doing this because if we don't, there's nowhere else in the world that's going to do this. It's going to be America. Everybody looks to us for leadership. And if we don't, it's going to be dark times. And so keep that in mind when you're thinking about us over here in Olympia and praying, but also think about it too when we're putting out some action items this session for how you can get involved. And I want to talk really quick. If you have a pen and paper, I want you to write a number down. So I'm going to give you a couple of seconds. Grab a pen and a piece of paper if you can and write a number down. This number is the legislative hotline. And the legislative hotline is the quickest way you can call directly to your legislator, wherever you're at in the state of Washington, and make your voice known. 1-800-562-6000. 1-800-562-6000. Also, during this legislative session, I am doing live Facebook updates. These are video updates online every day, trying to do it every day I can to let you know what's happening on the ground, you know, day by day, where the focus is going to be the next day, where the focus is going to be this day. And there's a couple of things that I want to mention. There are bills that are out there that may not directly impact an issue you care about, but they could, because one simple amendment, I'm talking like adding two numbers, adding a word, could dramatically change the bill to impact you. And it's always important that when I'm bringing things up that you keep that in mind, because I have a lot of people say, well, it doesn't directly impact the issue. Well, it could. And maybe definitely, it could go either way. That was the intent behind the whole bill, was to look like it was safe, get it through to a certain level, then amend on, change it to what they really wanted it to be, and then pass it out and sign it into law. You got to understand that's how the process works. Okay, so when I talk about a couple of these issues, one in particular, it could impact an issue you care about because they could amend it immediately the way that it's drafted right now. And it's always important to understand that when we're looking at legislation. It's also important to understand, too, that during these video updates, I may update the update later because things are changing so fast. I'll try to give you the best information that I have at the time, but sometimes staff does a little bit more research, clarifies an issue, or adds more information that is even more alarming or concerning, and I will update these video updates. In other words, I'll go on Facebook and I'll update it, and any of you that have shared, it should update automatically across all the shares. So check them out on my personal Facebook page. Share them far and wide. Appreciate everybody that's been sharing them already. Got the first update I did, we got over 400 shares and 60 today on the one. But it's a way that you can keep informed about what's happening in your state capital, in my state capital, and how you can get involved to change things for the better. All right. On the international front, in your daily intelligence briefing in the Middle East, shocking out of Turkey, a Turkish government ministry green lights, apparently, child marriage. For those of you that are not familiar with Islam, child marriage is allowed under Sharia law, 9 years old. It's so far away from our cultural views over here in the West. But the fact of the matter is Turkey apparently is headed down that road. Now, many of you have heard this show for a long time, know that we've been talking about Turkey heading down a more Islamist road and heading down a Sharia law road, which is actually not modern Turkey history. Modern Turks actually are more secular in their approach to things, but Erdogan is taking them down this road. So they're trying to reassert themselves, as I mentioned on a couple previous shows, as kind of the Sunni power in the Middle East. Jordan has tried to step up to do that because they're trying to fight back against the bloc that has been formed by the Saudi Arabians, the UAE, and Egypt, among others. So I think that this highlights there's going to be not just a ground war coming in this next year in the Middle East, but there's also going to be this ideological war that is happening. And for those, again, that need a refresher, the Hashemite Kingdom were the original stewards of Mecca. The Hashemite Kingdom is what we now call modern Jordan. The Saudis kicked them out and then took over the stewardship of Mecca. So you kind of need to understand that's why the Jordanians are trying to maneuver and position as well. Also, in the Middle East, and on the other side, on the Shia side. And I wanted to, I don't want to be simplistic about this, because a sheikh that I knew over in Iraq, he was Shia, and his wife was Sunni. The Kurds are actually Sunni as well. So, and they're adamantly opposed by the Turks, who are also Sunni. So it's a little bit more complicated than Shia-Sunni. But in this particular case, think of Iran, Saudi Arabia. And in, right now, Iran, the title, this is coming from Debkafile, Iran's cyber war over 48 million smartphone users was sparked by protest demonstrations. So Tehran's internet shut down its doomsday weapon for breaking up the New Year's anti-government protest, and it was routed with astonishing speed. This successful cyber campaign was waged against Iran by certain Western and Arab intelligence agencies led by the United States. You can guess who those are. But the this is something I want to highlight, the fact that there's a cyber war now between the United States, Western allies, Sunni Arabs, and Iran, and that Iran lost that initial cyber war. It's a cyber war, folks. It's the precursor. And we have an actual cyber war going on in the Middle East right now, according to Debkafile. You can go look it up for yourselves. The Mossad chief saying to the Iranians as well, we have eyes in Iran. Clearly things heading toward instability. But again, the alignment that's happening is along the lines that we've been talking about on this show. I also want to mention that it looks like there was an Israeli airstrike in Syria. Three separate strikes, apparently, in Syria by the Israelis over the last few days. Again, being reported by Debkafile. Also, and very interesting, Russia, foiled a massive attack on its Syrian bases by electronically controlling 6 drones and downing 7. Now, apparently this was a terrorist drone attack, okay, on Russian bases. And they were able to, you know, with this large swarm of unmanned aerial vehicles coming at the TARDIS naval base specifically, and one of the Russian air bases, the Russians were able to hack the drones, 6 of them, and then shoot down with their anti-aircraft missiles another 7 drones. So I don't want to overstate this, but this appears to be the first dramatic drone battle that has occurred in modern times, where, again, terrorists sent a swarm of unmanned aerial vehicles toward the TARDIS naval base in Syria. It's a Russian naval base, also a Russian air base. They were able to hack 6 of them, take control of them, and then 7 where they were able to shoot down with their anti-aircraft weapons. So a drone war also in the Middle East, a precursor, again, of what's happening over there. And this, I think, should get everybody that's listening to the show today to start paying attention to the Middle East. And again, I want to tell you that a great source I've gone to in the past is called DEBKA, D-E-B-K-A, D-E-B-K-A file. And it's a great source of what's happening on the ground in the Middle East. I want to move to the next thing on the national front. We have a lot of things happening, but I want to highlight 2, and one of them I'm setting up because we're going to be talking a little bit about Governor Inslee's State of the State address today in Olympia, and the fact that he spent 3/4 of it talking about climate change. Okay, on the national front, it appears now we're heading towards something called a Maunder minimum, or a minimum number of sunspots over a given period of time. And that actually precedes global cooling, okay? The lack of sunspots that have been measured over the last just 90 days has been so significant that some people are starting to say, hey, look, we might actually be headed toward a Maunder minimum, or a minimum number of sunspots, which eventually cools the Earth. Now, this flies totally in the face of the global warming alarmists, but does make a lot of sense for those paying attention to the weather and some of the objective sources that show that we are actually cooling temperature-wise from the remote satellite data set or the buoy system throughout the world. So I bring this up because there are still people that are not listening to reason, and I believe very conclusively that the activity of the sun is more more clearly aligned with our changing temperatures on the Earth than anything else. Now, people will say, well, temperatures have always changed, and they always will, and that's correct, but we can see general trends based on sunspots and also the Pacific Decadal Oscillation. That's the rotation of the warm currents in the ocean. So just understand that we're probably in for a period of cooling based on this new science and based on these observations that is coming out. Also on the national front, California prosecuting a man for anti-Muslim posts. We're getting into an area. Everybody understands that the First Amendment, and in most state constitutions, they have protections of freedom of speech, applies not to people. It applies to Congress or the legislature of the state. In other words, it says Congress shall not, and then it lists these things in the First Amendment. It is a restriction on the government and the governing to protect our inalienable rights. And our inalienable rights, one of the first and foremost being free speech, is to have viewpoints about everything, and the ability to express those viewpoints and not be discriminated against because of your viewpoint. And now we have California that looks like they're going to prosecute a man for his posts on Islam. And personally, you know, as Christians, we've been subjected to some very offensive beliefs, some very offensive remarks, some very just horrific hate. And I have to say that if we want to be consistent, we have to fight to defend those people's ability to express those views just as much as our own. It's important. Which brings me now to the regional front and the Sweet Cakes case out of Oregon. Folks that refused to bake a wedding cake for a same-sex wedding, a $135,000 fine was upheld. And I have to ask the question, if you said you must go to church, you said this to somebody in downtown Seattle, you must go to church, or we're going to fine you $135,000, right? They say, that's ridiculous. Why would you ever say that? How could you ever possibly think that was fair and just? But yet, you're asking these wedding cake makers to make a cake and then go and provide that cake as part of a religious ceremony. And I use religious in the broad sense. Or they have to pay $135,000. How's that fair? And how is that, and how does that comport with the unalienable right of conscience, the right of conscientious objection, which the liberals were very, very big about upholding during the 1960s. But it's the right not to participate in an activity based on sincerely held religious beliefs. And I think it holds true here, but also it's in our own Washington State Constitution, Article 1, Section 11, absolute freedom of conscience in all matters of religious sentiment. Also, Article 26 of our state constitution, which says there shall be perfect toleration of religious sentiment. How can this be perfect toleration of somebody exercising their conscience? It's not like these people couldn't go to another place and get a wedding cake. It's not like these people couldn't have gone to Safeway, couldn't have gone to another designer cake maker. But instead, the conscience, okay, of a Christian is violated. They have to choose between a $135,000 fine or their business. That is not freedom. Also on the regional front, and this coming out of Nevada, and we are going to have Sherry Duvalli on here, I hope here in a couple of minutes, in the Bundy Ranch trial, Judge Navarro yesterday ruling a mistrial with prejudice. Throwing the case out, clearing the Bundys completely, total vindication. And Sherry Duvalli of Readout News, we have you on the line right now. Tell us what's been going on down there in the celebration that must have ensued.
Hi, Matt. Thanks for having me on. We have had a town full of celebrations ever since the ruling. Mr. Bundy, Cliven, he's a really wonderful man. And he spoke to us today. The teacher is back. The teacher is back. That is all I can say about Mr. Bundy. He gave a press conference today in which he taught the principles that he was teaching 3 years ago. And it's as if, you know, he's never been away. He picked right up where he left off, and everybody was just thrilled. That's exactly what they wanted to hear. And he's raring to go and you know, to keep things going and to make sure everybody understands what their rights are.
Boy, I love it. I mean, it was really quite a turn of events with the breaking national news story you guys had on Readout News in regards to this this evidence that came out from Special Agent Larry Wooten, the lead investigator for the Bundy case, who essentially alleged misconduct. A kill book where they were bragging about driving three people to suicide, that the snipers actually were down there, that this confrontation was provoked, and they're even to the point of alleging sexual misconduct. And the judge rightly just said, look, this is flagrant misconduct. There was deliberate deception here. and misdirection and threw the case out. How have people been analyzing it down there? Because you don't see this really on the mainstream news right now.
Well, it is generally thought that the Wooten email was the catalyst for this mistrial and this dismissal. That was such powerful information. The prosecutors have been lying to the judge all along. They had lied on multiple occasions, and the judge, when she heard about some of this stuff, she finally stopped and looked at the actual evidence and saw that she had been lied to. And she admonished those prosecutors in ways that I would never have imagined. This case is going to go down in the history book as far as prosecutorial misconduct goes. There have been so many egregious violations, and those are quotes from her. You know, she called them egregious and disingenuous and outrageous. And she couldn't believe everything that she had kind of been roped into, and she did her best to make it right. And that is not just by dismissing with prejudice, but she hinted that the future defendants and the past defendants need to start filing their motions to get this stuff put behind them as well.
So there are a lot of people asking what's next. We're going to be putting together a letter. We're going to have some Idaho representatives sign on as well that we're going to send to Congress, the Trump administration, specifically Secretary Zinke, Attorney General Sessions, and the president himself, asking that an investigation ensue for the handling of this case, not only by the DOJ, but also by the BLM. What else is the next step? And go ahead and comment on that as well.
Well, I certainly hope that they investigate the FBI, because they were deeply entrenched in this deception. It was an awful lot of the FBI's doing that kept this information from getting to the defense. And they certainly need to do a major investigation on just those actors themselves. But the BLM, starting with Dan Love, you know, they got real ugly, and they need to clean the entire department up. And personally, I think they need to get rid of it. I don't see a need for a Bureau of Land Management myself. But, you know, there are other minds that are, you know, a little bit more legalese than me as far as how that works, and I just don't know. But I think, you know, that is certainly called for, is an investigation on the entire department, because it does seem like it's very widespread.
Well, I would just bring up the fact that Special Agent Wooten's own notes in the second memorandum, and this one was from the assistant special agent in charge, but citing the notes by Special Agent Larry Wooten, where Larry Wooten said that BLM, and this was one of their weaknesses of their case, BLM couldn't manage lands, you know, like they're supposed to. And I think for a lot of people, they're like, well, duh. So again, it brings up the issue of why do we need this? And especially when the agency itself went so rogue to have a federal judge excoriate them and the DOJ from the from the bar.
Oh yeah, this whole thing. There's going to be so much more coming out to the public. We've only scratched the surface. There is a lot of information that has still not been made public. It's still sealed, and there are attorneys for the Review Journal and other media that are fighting to get that unsealed. And I hope that they're successful, because this is so important for the citizens to see exactly how far these government agents have gone. And I can't stress enough how serious some of these things will be.
Well, let's talk a little bit about it. You interviewed Cliven Bundy. You also interviewed, I believe, Larry Klayman. Tell us a little bit about what those interviews entailed and some of the insights they gave you.
Yeah, I just finished, as a matter of fact, a few minutes ago, the interview with Larry Klayman. He's a very nice man, and he is not over in his fight. He is calling for Jeff Sessions to do some major overhauling. He has discussed with me the civil rights lawsuits that every one of these defendants have right to file, and that includes the ones that are incarcerated, such as Todd Engel and Greg Burleson and Jerry Lemus, etc. They, some of these defendants were coerced into taking plea agreements based on lies and faulty information. And they, you know, not only do they have the right to file to have their indictment set aside, but they also have rights to file the civil rights lawsuits. And, you know, I'm hoping that Todd Engel can get released soon. He's having some trouble with that. So far, the court, you know, meaning Judge Navarro, has not allowed him a new attorney. Therefore, nobody can file any motions on his behalf. He's not even set as pro se status right now. He's set in limbo. He has nobody representing him. So we're trying to get an attorney to file these motions to get his conviction and everything set aside. At the very least, he would qualify for a new trial, but I think before they tried to give him a new trial, they would just set it aside and release him. You're the lawyer, Matt. What do you think?
You know, well, so here's the problem. Anytime that you sign any sort of a plea agreement, they make you admit to something, right? I mean, they always do. And so to the extent that he's admitted to something, that makes it a little more difficult. I think, honestly, you know, pressing Trump for a commutation of the sentence might even be the easiest thing to do instead of going through the court system. That would be my initial gut reaction. What does Larry Klayman think is the best way forward, and what is his kind of gut on this?
Well, he thinks they all need to start filing motions immediately. There is the next trial is actually scheduled for Mel and Dave Bundy, as well as Joe O'Shaughnessy and Jason Woods. Their trial is actually scheduled for February 26th. I do expect that one to have motions filed to set it aside or dismiss it or however it's phrased, and I expect that to get granted. Now, the ones that did the plea agreements, I have heard a lot of controversy on that as to whether or not they have a chance to do anything about it. And there is hope. I understand that you know, if they file certain things, or like I said, I'm not a legalese person. I'm not an attorney. I'm learning as I go. And it's kind of sad that I'm learning as much as I am, because these trials are so important to have somebody sitting in there and reporting on them. But the defendant, such as Todd Engel, he never pled out. He was actually convicted based on all this faulty information. So I'm hoping that he has a much better chance of getting released from prison. He has not even been sentenced yet. His sentencing has actually been put back to March.
Well, that actually, if that's the case, then actually there is an opportunity there. And I think that filing for full discovery in the other two prosecutions that are going to go forward, but also asking Jeff Sessions the question, why is your Department of Justice continuing to pursue this after these guys have won not just once, but twice on major cases in Oregon and Nevada? It just doesn't make sense to me.
That's true. But I'll tell you what, this case will be up in the books just like the Chapman case will, as far as prosecutorial misconduct. They're going to cite this case for years and probably decades as one of the most egregious cases, and stay away from everything to do with, you know, this kind of behavior. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. I mean, you just cannot. And I've seen a lot of stuff go on in courtrooms, but when you have prosecutors that are accused by a federal district court judge of flagrant misconduct and deliberate deception, those are words that are used when they're getting ready to investigate and prosecute prosecutors, right? I mean, it's unbelievable that it took this long for the information to get out, but the truth eventually did win out, and praise God for that. But I think it's incumbent upon us, too, that we always have to be eternally vigilant in defense of our freedom and liberty.
Absolutely. And I know that there is not a very good track record for holding prosecutors accountable for this kind of behavior. But my personal opinion is I would dearly love to see Stephen Miree, Daniel Sheath, and Nadia Ahmed sitting at a defense table, because they certainly deserve it after this.
Yeah, it's just unreal what's been going on. So what words of wisdom did Cliven Bundy have for everyone after this? And then apparently, was there a press conference today as well?
There will be a full press conference tomorrow at 1 o'clock, and it will be live streamed through Readout News. It was rained out today, actually, is what happened. He did give, it was kind of a press conference preview today. It was not the actual press conference that he plans on giving. So stay tuned for that one. His words of wisdom really boiled down to the fact that God has prevailed. This is God's mission. He's put his faith in God, and he's won. He won because of God's good graces.
Well, I guess we're back on the air. As soon as Representative Taylor walked up, the whole system shut down. Apparently Inslee didn't want him on the radio or something. I don't know what's going on. Well, thank you for your patience while we got through that. I don't know what happened with the internet. So, want to welcome Representative Dave Taylor, one of the lead negotiators for the education stuff last year, and one of the lead guys on appropriations. Dave, how are you doing?
Hey, there we go. I'm tired, believe it or not. We're 2 days in, and I'm exhausted.
Well, I tell you what, listening to Governor Inslee's State of the State speech today, it sounded more like a shopping list.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, so it was predictable, 100% predictable. We need to raise taxes. We need a carbon tax. We need to ban firearms. We need to close some sort of supposed loophole in buying semi-automatic rifles. We need to pass a capital budget. What was interesting, probably the most interesting aspect of the governor's State of the State address, was that there was zero mention of getting to a Hearst fix. He never mentioned it. And that is the single largest issue facing the legislature early on here. And in fact, it's the single largest obstacle to passing a capital budget.
So he says today during his State of the State that we essentially need to stop holding the capital budget hostage, right? That the capital budget is going to bring a lot of jobs to Washington State, when it really ignores the fact that Hearst has cost $6.9 billion in lost economic activity and is costing us jobs every day.
Yeah. The governor seems to forget that without water, it really doesn't matter what kind of jobs you supposedly create, because you're not going to have any place for people to live. The whole thing was, this is a family show, so I'm trying to be positive and at least watch my language. But the fact of the matter remains that we know there's an economic impact associated with Hearst. It's massive, not only in the construction industry, but the secondary businesses, the Main Street businesses that rely on construction. We know that local governments are facing, you know, as high as a 30% reduction in assessed valuation, which means if you don't live in the rural areas and you don't think you care about Hearst, you better start, because it will result in a tax shift, which means your property taxes will go up while everybody else's valuation goes down. This is a generational issue. This is an issue that each and every person that owns property in Washington State should be concerned with, and frankly are concerned with, because I'm hearing from them. When I say generational impact, I'm talking about, you know, we all know that in agriculture we have an aging population, and for whatever reason, and I'm somebody who looks forward to getting right back into agriculture. As that population ages, we have to find people who want to go and work the farm. And in some cases, thankfully, it's actually the families are returning. It's the kids or the grandkids that are coming back. And so now we're faced with this possibility of they want to come back to farm, but they can't build a house because they can't have a well. This is craziness.
So I guess the response that I would have then to the governor is, Governor, stop holding our water hostage.
Exactly.
And future generations, right?
Exactly. We're arguing over what amount. It's less than 1% annual consumptive use, which is nothing. I mean, you could stop all drilling wells tomorrow and there'd be no measurable impact. to the stream flows in Washington State. But you know, aside from that, if you look at the number of wells that are drilled on the statewide basis annually, it's roughly 4,000. We're arguing about 4,000 wells. We've held up a and rightfully so, $4.4 billion or $3.4 billion capital budget, over 4,000 wells. And now we've got a proposal from the governor who wants to spend $200 million over the next 10 years to mitigate 4,000 wells a year. So let's do some simple math. $20 million per year divided by 4,000 wells. That's a massive investment for almost zero return on it. It makes no economic sense.
So we have this situation too, and I don't think that they realized this when they were celebrating the Hearst decision, but this massive property tax devaluation, $74 million approximately in Spokane County, and I know it's worse in actually other places, but that property devaluation means there's less money going toward education potentially.
This one's a little more difficult to explain. So in those school districts that are predominantly rural, right, the levy rates are what they are, and the assessments play a little bit into that. But ultimately what it does is it puts additional burden on your operating budget through levy equalization, meaning that it's going to cost more money to the taxpayers of Washington across the state through levy equalization in order to overcome that loss of revenue.
So let's talk about revenue for a second. Couple phenomenal ideas, and I'm being sarcastic. A carbon tax, because of course that's the solution to everything. The governor spends three quarters of his speech talking about climate change. And then, oh, by the way, there's also a new sugar tax that's going to be introduced as well.
Oh, I didn't catch that one. I must have been writing down notes on how bad the carbon tax is. Yeah. Well, what was it Reagan said? If it moves, tax it. If it keeps moving, regulate it. And if it stops moving, subsidize it.
That's right.
Ensley and Company, that is their motto for all of this. And we joked on my show that, you know, we love to follow California. The Democrats in this state think California is this mecca of progressive nirvana, I guess. I don't know. I mean, they want to adopt the CAFE standards, which is the low carbon fuel standards that California has, which is going to increase fuel costs in Washington State up to 20 cents a gallon. They want to go to zero carbon emissions. They want to adopt the Paris Climate Accord. They want to adopt a carbon tax. When's enough enough?
Well, and did you notice during his speech too, he says, well, China's going to do it.
Right. Yeah.
So we're supposed to follow the example of China.
We've done everything in our power in Washington State to eliminate coal generated energy. And now they're pointing to China, who's the single largest user of coal-fired energy, as the shining example of why we should do this.
And oh, by the way, hydro is still not renewable.
Right. Well, we can't count that, because if you counted that, then we would meet all of our renewable fuel standards and renewable energy standards for decades to come.
It was interesting. He tried to blame climate change, forest fires on climate change. And everybody on the Republican side is like, no, we aren't taking the fuel load out of our forests. That's what's causing them to burn to the ground.
Yeah. To his credit, the leader of the House Republican Caucus, Dan Christensen, made that observation in the AP forum here last week and said we need to deal with, if we want to address carbon and carbon emissions, let's deal with forest fires. And of course, the reporters in the room, well, you have to have a capital budget to do that. No, actually, you don't. You actually have to eliminate the environmental constraints that this state has put in place to actually managing forests, letting people get in and cut firewood, letting people get in and actually graze the forests again. I mean, there's so much that we can do simply through policy to decrease that fire load. It would make the frequency and the severity of forest fires drop significantly.
So, folks, I want you to imagine for a second sipping on a Coca-Cola, pumping gas, okay, both of which are going to have massive tax increases. So picture now a vacuum cleaner and in your back pocket, and that's what we're talking about here.
Oh, it never ends. We're the second day, right? And I can almost guarantee, I'm going to a little prediction here. I've got my crystal ball out and I just shined it up. By the end of next week, there'll be at least five more different tax proposals floating out there. Who knows what they are? I mean, capital gains is always on the table. Now, you know, you just mentioned a sugar tax. We've got the carbon tax. You know, what's next? Water? We're going to, I mean, air? This year is weird. I don't know how else to put it. It's just odd.
It is. It has a different feel to it. And also, it was interesting that he tried to say that with all of those things, this big shopping list of expansion of government. By the way, he mentions democracy five times in his speech, right? We live in a republic. But, you know, he has a shopping list. And then at the end of it says, and this reflects the values of all of Washington.
Right. Well, you got to remember, in the governor's eyes, Washington State ends at the Cascade Crest. And it might end at about Olympia if you look south.
But he mentioned wheat fields during his speech.
Yeah, I don't know. I think if we looked hard enough, we'd find a wheat field in western Washington.
Yeah, maybe.
It's possible.
An acre.
Although he may not know what wheat is.
Wheat, not weed.
We're not going to make a comment on that.
So let's talk real quick, too, about something that was brought up about gun control during this entire speech. And specifically, House Bill 2422 came out today. It's a high-capacity magazine ban, essentially creating a registry for magazines as well. I mean, it's just, where does this stop?
Well, I'm still trying to figure out, I mentioned it just a little bit ago, where he specifically mentioned closing the loophole to background checks for semi-automatic rifles. For the life of me, I don't know what he's talking about. Because
I didn't either. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, I've bought a rifle and kind of went through a background check, so I have no clue of what he's referring to.
Well, you know, he did say that he wanted, 21-year-olds to...
Is that the loophole?
Maybe, because, you know, 18-year-olds that are allowed to serve in the military shouldn't be able to own an AR-15.
Right, a modern sporting rifle.
You know, I mean, what I got out of the speech today was a total disconnect from reality. Even on the carbon issue, he doesn't have a lot of Democrat votes because they realize how bad this would impact the economy.
No, that's completely accurate. In fact, more and more I see Democrats shying away from it. Now, when the pressure mounts and the vote has to be taken, what will they do? That's a completely different question. But I think there's a significant question as to whether they ever bring these to the floor. Bringing them to the floor only to watch it fail catastrophically would make the governor look really bad. They can't afford that. He wants to be president in 2020. So he needs a win. What that win looks like is yet to be seen. But, you know, the easy one for him may actually end up being the low carbon fuel standards mirroring California. We just had a hearing on that today. It doesn't work. The feedstock necessary to go to that, there isn't enough of it, number one. And number two, the single largest plant for biodiesel is Singapore. So we had to ask the question, do you actually factor in the amount of carbon used to ship biodiesel from Singapore to Washington State? And we didn't really get an answer on that.
Chirp.
Yeah.
Chirp. Well, how did the press conference go today? You were in the press conference. I got to tell you the most startling thing out of the governor's speech today.
Yeah, no kidding.
Was mentioning you by name in a positive light.
I'm gonna need to go and seek probably professional help now. Honestly, I was a little surprised by that. I was surprised the governor knew my name, frankly. But you know, whatever. It was odd.
Yeah. So how was the media? I mean, you did this press conference, and you could see the expression on a couple Republicans' face, you know, kind of a poor poker face. But, you know, the media was asking some kind of exasperating questions.
Yeah, they were. You know, the media corps, not all of them. I mean, there were some pretty good questions that came out of, but there's a couple in the media corp that they can't help themselves to ask questions, fully loaded questions by, you know, beating up Republicans. You guys are opposed to everything. I'd say on all the press conference, media availability went really well. you know, Senator Schessler and Representative Christensen both did a real good job of laying out the key issues for the Republican caucuses and, you know, talking about, you know, everything from prioritized budgeting and not raiding the rainy day fund and, you know, to simply meet a court mandate. You know, we tried, I think all of us on, today tried to really at various points focus the questions back to Hearst, but even the media court didn't want to talk about Hearst. They wanted to talk about all the other stuff.
Well, that's the deal. When you try to focus them on the issues that matter to people, it's very difficult because we have the facts on our side. And speaking of that, last week I had rancher Ted Wishon on the show. We were talking about the Washington State Animal Identification System. What are your thoughts? I mean, you've been in the cattle industry for years. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, the direction it's been heading over the past few years, I'm not a big fan of. You know, they eliminated the self-inspection program years ago. They still are pushing at various levels the RFID. We're making it harder and harder for, you know, at least the smaller producers and frankly, even the large producers to continue to stay in business. I mean, you have to, it's not just animal ID, it's everything else, but animal ID is a part of it. You know, I personally have always been a number one, I think we should be promoting our brand laws. And I personally am a supporter of our existing brand laws for identification purposes. And I think we need to do a better job of promoting our own, you know, in our case, Washington grown beef. You know, we produce some of the best beef in the country, if not the world. And, you know, there's been obstacles put in place that don't necessarily allow us to promote that. And, you know, there's some things we can do that would help our farmers and ranchers, but we're not in charge. So
not yet, but we're holding back the tide. So Dave, if you could, you have your own radio show on Saturdays. If you could plug that for the listeners who want to tune in.
Yeah. We're out of Yakima, God, Family and Country on 9:30 AM at 10:30 in the morning. And I think there's a replay in Spokane, but to be honest, I don't know when that is. So, but you can tune in. You can also check me out on SoundCloud.com. Just search God, Family, and Country and listen to the latest episode and I think four or five other episodes. And this week, this Saturday's show, hopefully we're going to actually have Matt Shea on joining us.
I look forward to it. I do. Final comment real briefly on the Bundy trial. The fact that it was dismissed, and the judge excoriating the BLM, similar to what happened in the Wayne Hage case years ago. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, it's interesting that both of those came out of Nevada. You know, back with the Hage case, you know, I followed that closely back in the day and the subsequent appeals. And at the time, I thought that was probably the worst scolding that a judge could give the federal agencies until now. And you know, this is, frankly, it's unbelievable. And I'm hopeful that if nothing else, Congress will step up and start looking at the conduct of the Justice Department as well as BLM and at a minimum. And, you know, hopefully President Trump's paying attention.
I hope so. Representative Dave Taylor from Moxie, Washington. Thanks for joining me on Patriot Radio. Appreciate everything you're doing down here. It's really a pleasure to serve with you, man.
Hey, my pleasure.
All right. We're going to end the show real quick with some breaking news from last night on the local front. Bob West, the vice chair of the Sheriff's Citizen Advisory Review Board, was terminated for using election facilities for public advocacy on January 2nd, 2018. Apparently, it was actually official before that on December 21st, according to a letter from the city of Spokane that has been verified as authentic. Here's an interesting part of this. It says in this letter, quote, okay, that Mr. West claims his behaviors were made in part due to outside forces, end quote. We don't know what that means, but I think we need to investigate whether a legislative solution is necessary here to prevent this from happening again, because apparently also Mr. West, in the same letter, was accused of violating, and again, some of this might actually be potentially illegal behavior if you're using background check systems that are supposed to be used for law enforcement purposes for political purposes that can be a violation of the law, up to and including a felony, depending on the database that you're using. But particularly in this letter, it is very interesting that he was accused of violating anti-bullying and anti-retaliation policies of the city of Spokane. So we're going to be following this story. We're going to be taking a look and seeing what legislative fixes that we can find to stop this from happening again, and also to take away the incentive to do this, because Mr. West is now applying for retirement. And when you have an abuse of public trust that, like is outlined in this letter, I think it's very clear, as we just mentioned, the BLM, not just in recent times, but also back during the Wayne Hage case days, a decade and a half ago, that these things, you know, will become a culture if you don't nip them in the bud. And I think that that's really where we're coming from, that we have to check bureaucracies and make sure that government is fulfilling its purpose, the governing is fulfilling its purpose to protect our rights to life, liberty, property, and the ability to defend the same. Well, this is Matt Shea. Thank you once again for joining me here on Patriot Radio today. I want to also tell you, if you haven't taken a look at 1050 AM, that's KFIO, they broadcast throughout all of Eastern Washington. You can hear Patriot Radio on it on Tuesdays and Thursdays, 4 to 5, also replay at 9. And if you're not getting it in your area, you might want to try AM 1050 and get that broadcast, because we want everybody to listen in. And also it's on podcast on Podbean. God bless all of you, and may he make this generation the greatest one.